The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Help. Welcome to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show, sponsored by Weinerman Pain and Wellness, Philadelphia's premier rehabilitation, physical therapy, and chiropractic facility located in the heart of Center City, Philadelphia.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. I'm your host, Joe Doherty. We have a fantastic show lined up. We're sponsored by Weinerman Pain and Wellness, Serious Doctors for Serious Injuries. Our featured attorney on the show is Joe Mesa of Mesa and Associates. We're going to be talking about catastrophic injuries, and it's going to be a fascinating conversation. We're going to start off the show with our weekly wellness segment with Dr. Albert Talone. Doc, how are you?
I'm good, Joe. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Doc. And certainly, this is a time of year. Last time we talked about headaches and migraines, and we're going to get into them and sinus headaches. Let's talk about, before the show, we talked about some new treatments for individuals that suffer from migraines. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the last time we discussed headaches, we were talking about migraine therapies, and in recent years, there have been some marvelous progress in the treatment of migraine headaches with newer medications that are more definitive in the treatment of these vascular neurological headaches. And recently, there's been another pharmaceutical item that's been added to the armamentarium for migraine headaches, and it's an injectable. And this injectable drug can be administered by your physician, and it's for patients who have intractable, recurrent, persistent, disabling migraine headaches that are affecting their attendance at work and play and all types of activities. So I wanted to mention that. It's fairly new. It's been out the last few months. And, of course, it's basically indicated for folks who have tried everything and are still getting many headaches a week, a month. And the current therapy is becoming overused by them, costing them quite a bit of money. So they may want to consider this treatment, which is less expensive, depending on usage, and decreases the severity and the frequency of those headaches. It is injectable, so you should talk to your physician about that. So I just wanted to finish.
Doc, how often, as far as the injectable goes, how often would one, I guess you're talking, when you say injectable, you're talking about somebody who inject themselves, is that correct?
Yes. Initially, your physician would do that, and then after that, you can, if you're so inclined, you can do it yourself at home, and it's safe. It has very few side effects. It's very well tolerated for this type of medication, and it's a monthly injection, Joe. So it's not too obtrusive in your schedule, and its efficacy, effectiveness is supposedly quite significant. So just want to include that for patients who are looking for an alternative for persistent, intractable, recurrent migraine headaches, which can be very disabling.
When did it come into the market?
I think it's been out a few months. I just recently learned about it, and I just wanted to put that out there to be inclusive, finish up our discussion as we discuss different types of headaches today.
Now, this time of year, people are getting colds, and the kids are coming home from school, sniffles, all those things, and then they turn into sinus headaches, and anybody who's had a sinus headache knows what they feel like, and they can be completely debilitating. How does a cold progress into a sinus headache, and what are some of the causes of it? And then let's talk about the solutions.
Well, just to recap, migraine headaches are usually one side or the other of the head, right or left. It's usually associated with visual disturbances. The pain is severe, and patients have changes in smell and vision. That's a migraine headache. Sinus headache, totally different creature. This is more a frontal headache. This is in your face. This headache right in your face. Your eye orbits can be very sore. Your forehead, very tender across the front of your forehead. It can extend pressure into your nose, your cheekbones. It can be so severe where it can actually make your teeth hurt. Your upper teeth, your upper jaw teeth can be sore. If you bend over, when you change positions, you'll feel pressure when you come up. You feel pressure when you bend your head below your waist, and you feel this pressure in your upper jaw, the roof of your mouth. And as I said, sometimes you think you're having a toothache. That is a classic sinus headache with pressure and congestion in your sinuses, in your head. And that's a front of the head. That's a forward headache. And it's what they call in-your-face headache.
At what point does a cold go in that direction? In other words, what makes that happen?
Well, colds are mostly self-limiting. Rarely does it get to the point where you have a sinus infection, something of that nature. You may develop a low-grade fever, about 99 or 100 degrees temperature. You may have some discharge from the nose that will be thick and discolored. And you'll get relief of the pressure when you evacuate that material, but then it comes right back. You know something is different. You're getting a significant discharge. You can even get a posterior throat infection because you have postnasal discharges. So you have an irritated throat, a burning throat. You're getting discharge from your nose and your throat, and associated with this headache. And that's going to be a symptom complex from a cold that has not resolved. It's usually an unresolved cold head condition that has gotten worse. It can, very rarely does that happen, but it can cause a sinusitis. It can be there.
Doc, what are the solutions?
Well, you should see your physician, your primary care physician. You can see an ear, nose, and throat specialist. Can radiate into your ears. You can't get pressure in your ears. And the treatment for that is humidification. Make sure there's plenty of moisture where you sleep, not too hot, because this often occurs in houses when they got the heat up and there's low moisture in the air. That creates a vulnerability for you. Antibiotics, antihistamines, decongestants. They have the new been out in recent years. They have the inhaled nasal sprays that are basically saline or salt solution. They have steroid cortisone inhaler therapies that are safe to use, that don't get absorbed in the bloodstream. There are many different treatments that can be used simultaneously, piggyback together to help alleviate the infection. This is a usual bacterial infection. Sometimes can be viral, but usually it's a bacterial infection with a sinusitis.
Well, Doc, listen, I want to. This is the time of year, obviously, when a lot of that stuff, a lot of people seem to come down with those with the colds, the sinus infections, and like I said, anybody who's had one, how long can they last?
Well, that's a very good question, Joe, as always people say. That's a good question. They can last some time. They can last a few days to maybe 2 weeks. You have to keep the treatment up. Can't even go longer, 2-3 weeks. Because the sinuses are a difficult place to reach with antibiotics, so you have to continue therapy for maybe 2-3 weeks, especially in a serious infection, which can be, again, incapacitating. So, see your doctor. You'll know something's wrong. You know something's different. Something's not right. And follow their instruction and continue the duration of antibiotic therapy so you do have the infection resolved. It's very, very, very important. Keep your hands off your face. Wash your hands frequently. That's your best prevention, too.
Doc, I want to thank you so much again for the great information. Certainly, we appreciate it every week. That's Dr. Albert Talone of Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Doc, we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Take care, my friend. Have a good day.
And you as well. All right. After the break, we're going to come back with the man that I would, and I've said this several times, but I've not said it on air. If I had one individual and I had a family member, or if it was me that was in a serious accident, I wanted somebody to represent me. The individual we're going to bring on the show in about 5 minutes is the person we're going to see. We'll be back after the break.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia Radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness. From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation. For us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
They just told us right away that we're going to house you, we're going to feed you, and every single one of his medical bills is just all taken care of.
They've saved my family from financial ruin. It allowed me and my wife both to focus on the most important thing, which was the health and well-being of our son.
We have phenomenal research, outstanding clinical care, and the generosity of public, which allow us to treat patients regardless of what it takes. And that's what makes St. Jude so magical.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, families never receive a bill for treatment, travel, housing, or food, because the only thing a family should worry about is helping their child live.
Doctors send us the toughest cases to be treated at St. Jude, and our patients come from all over the world.
When we come here, they told me, don't worry, everything being taken care of.
We could never repay St. Jude for what they've given us.
Because of you.
Gracias a ti.
Because of you.
There is St. Jude.
Help, I need somebody help, not just anybody.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Who's Who and Philly Labor Show. We have a tremendous show today, and we're going to be talking catastrophic injuries. I'm ecstatic to have Joe Mesa, who is the founding partner and obviously the managing partner of Mesa and Associates. Joe, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me here.
It's great to have you. And I said it to Austin earlier. If there was one person, obviously your reputation has a lot to do with it, but also just knowing you, over the last couple of years. And if I had one person I had to pick and it was a family member and I knew I was in, you know, there was a situation where, you know, lives were on the line and somebody had to go in and represent us, I said I would pick Joe Mesa. And I say that because you have not only a great reputation as an attorney and somebody who's, you know, has an extensive legal background, but you have a very competitive background and somebody that I feel like is going to, you know, go to bat. And would I be correct in that assumption?
Well, I appreciate that, Joe. We work hard and try to do the best for our clients. And, I don't know, I was born and raised, came up as a fighter and, been fighting since I was a kid, played competitive sports my whole life. And, I like the competition aspect of what we do and I like the fight. But the important thing is we have people who are very severely injured and we're doing our best to get them some compensation and really, and what we talk about is peace of mind and financial security for our clients so they can be taken care of and have a future for themselves and their families that's going to be the best it can be under the circumstances.
The interesting thing about that is, and the reason I said what I said is you got one shot at this, man. And, you know, as an injury victim, somebody who's been, and we'll talk about what catastrophic injuries are, but as somebody who has a family member, who has been severely injured in whatever type of situation, we'll talk about the different types of situation. This is it for them. In other words, you know, they have to win. They're alive. They may never work again. They may be in a situation and they've been providing for their family or at least contributing, a big portion of the financial, support for the family. And now they may never ever be able to do that. And so, it's an emotional thing really because you know what's on the line and they have to make I've seen this happen and it wasn't in a personal injury or a catastrophic injury situation, but I know somebody close. And had they had a little bit of insight on who to represent them, their life was on the line and they made a mistake. And that's one of the great things about the broadcast here that we get the opportunity to introduce individuals who, you know, you talk about peace of mind. Everybody thinks they're invincible. And a lot of people think that nothing's going to happen to them. But when you start thinking about your family members and your kids and all that, it hits home a little bit. And so when you walk in there and you see somebody and you represent somebody who you know is in a bad way and everything's on the line, what's that responsibility like?
Well, first of all, Joe, severe injuries, catastrophic injuries can be life-changing and life-altering in every aspect of your life. The pain that you're going through, the disability, the things you can no longer do anymore, the emotional aspect of it, depression, post-traumatic stress, all those things can affect every aspect of that person's life, affect their family, their spouse, their loved ones, in addition to them personally. And that's, you know, what we try to make sure we take care of both the injured person as well as those people around them to do the best we can to get them in the best situation they can be in going forward. But, what we want to do when someone comes in with that type of injury is find out everything about them, both as human beings and people, what their life was like before, what their hopes are for the future, in addition to what happened to them, what their injuries are, and how we can try to make their lives better.
And when you get those calls, and what I find amazing is we talk about a lot of things, but when your phone rings and, you know, you're getting that type and that's, you know, you're that is what you get. How do you prepare when, you know, somebody's coming in and this must happen a decent amount. What's that experience like when you get a family walking in and the individual comes in? They may have a brain injury. They may have a spine injury and, you know, they're sitting down, you know, of course, the legal part of it is one thing and you are very experienced in all those things. But what's that responsibility like when they come in? How do you brace yourself for that?
Well, it's a huge responsibility, and I try to pride myself on treating every case and every client, particularly those who have life-changing injuries, like I would if it was my own case or a member of my family. And I live with the case and those folks, and I tell them, you can contact me anytime. You can reach me. I'm in court. I'm running around. I'm working hard, but send me an email, leave me a message, and I'll get back to you. And I work like that. I'm often calling people back or getting back to them, working on their cases at 10 o'clock at night or on the weekends. I put myself into that case the way I would want it if someone was doing it for me. How do I prepare myself for it? Well, you know, so it's interesting. Some people ask me, doesn't it get depressing? Don't you feel down sometimes because of the horrible injuries you've seen, children burned or people paralyzed or amputations, brain injuries? They're never going to be the same again. Their life is never going to be the same. And my answer to that has always been, and I've never much thought about being down or depressed, no. I mean, I actually am empowered. It makes me want to work hard and fight to do a good job for those people. And, you know, I can't change their injury often, although sometimes if you get them the appropriate compensation, things change in the future. Medicine's always advancing, that they have a fund that changes can happen in the future. But I know I'm going to do everything I can and feel empowered to work hard, get the best experts, dig for the information, and make the defendant or defendants who are responsible pay to bring them to justice.
Now, when somebody comes in, managing expectations in regards to this is going to be, it could take some time, and you're dealing with stress, you're dealing with emotions, you're not only a legal representative with their life in your hands, but also you're basically, you become a counselor, more than just a legal counselor. How do you manage the expectations when you're dealing with so many things? Because at the beginning is when you're kind of setting the pace and saying, this is what you can expect. You know, what's the approach there?
Well, oftentimes a client comes in and they look at you as the person who's going to do everything for them. And we try to do that. I mean, they expect you to be their lawyer, their counselor, psychologist, friend, confidant. Sometimes, you know, we get calls frequently asking for medical advice. And we try to be there for them. We staff our cases with teams so that those cases are clients have multiple people that they can communicate with and get their questions answered. Every case we have, we staff with at least two lawyers and a paralegal. We have four nurses in the office, so there's nurses working on the cases and try to meet all those needs. But also some of that is, you know, we can't do everything in-house, and referring folks out to good doctors or letting them know where they can get the best treatment, or whether it's psychological treatment or physical treatment or otherwise.
You're juggling, you know, not only their legal, but their medical. And one of the things you're talking about medical that I find really interesting is you're dealing with two fronts here. You're dealing with the actual physical, and then you're dealing with their part of the medical that obviously, you know, that supports the legal. And how important is the medical to any case, particularly? And you're looking at both sides. I mean, I know in a work comp case, you sit there, you know, they talk about, you know, having to go to a panel doctor and all those things. And then, and they're always trying to deny. And it always becomes a legal kind of volleyball type thing. And I jump up in the air and say, wait a second, what about the guy or the woman's health here? You know, putting them through one of them facilities where, you know, it's just like a mill or something like that, just to support the defense's, you know, position, where they get no diagnosis and they get no documentation. When you're dealing with injuries that are catastrophic, how do you manage that?
Well, the patient's health is the most important thing, and I will always tell clients, look, let me worry about the case. Let me worry about the difficult things related to the litigation. It's going to take time. I'm going to be working on it all the time. The other lawyers and staff will be. We're going to be fighting for you. You need to focus on your physical and emotional well-being. And we want them you know, depending on what kind of case it is and what the injury is, to see the best doctors they can, get the best treatment they can. Sometimes they already are. Sometimes, you know, we think someone better could help them, and we may make a suggestion or a recommendation for someone that they can treat with. And the goal here is to get them the best that they can be, both from a medical perspective as well as from an emotional perspective, and eventually in the case of financial perspective. But part of it depends on what kind of case we're talking about. So, for example, we do every kind of significant injury case. So in a medical malpractice case, dealing with physicians who are experts that are going to testify against other physicians, that's a big part of your case. Or getting treatment, or making sure the patient gets treatment from someone who's going to be helpful to them. You know, some doctors hear it's a malpractice case, I don't want to have anything to do with it, I don't want to help this person. But having relationships in the community and in the medical communities help with those things.
So in essence, I mean, and I'm sure when you're juggling a lot, you have a team to do that. You got one eye on the medical, because you also got to make sure that this person, especially, doesn't fall apart and it isn't going in the wrong direction. That has to be an interesting responsibility, because with a firm of your size of firm and yourself, you understand, you know, you may know when they come in and go, you know, this is not a special, you know, you may know of other specialists that they can go see that may be, yeah, obviously better for what they're doing. You know, they're not experienced. A lot of times they're just going with individuals who have friends that are, you know, listen, why don't you go to my doctor? Why don't you do this? But in the case of handling something that's so comprehensive, you have one eye on the medical and one eye on the legal.
Well, and absolutely. And sometimes we know that a doctor someone's seeing may not be the best, right? We may know because of the malpractice or other work we do, hey, this may not be the best guy for you given the extent of your injury, and maybe you should get another opinion. Maybe you should see somebody else.
Well, it's interesting, because I think I ran into you on the street that one time when you were going to a meeting and I was going to a broadcast, and I told you about my knee. That was the time I was, somebody.
It was hot. It was summertime.
It was hot. It was summertime. And, but it was interesting, because I went to, I thought I just needed to get a shot in my knee. I ended up going to a hospital. Now, I'm not going to mention the name of the hospital, but, I'd mentioned it to you, and one of the other attorneys said, somebody said, well, that's where in our community they say people go to die. You know what I mean? Sarcastically. But the truth was, I thought I was only going in there for a shot in the leg, a cortisone shot. And when I got there, my blood count was up. They took me in, and they just didn't have the service, so I had to get transferred somewhere else. But had I known that, had I ran into you before I went to the hospital, I would just go in, because I couldn't get my family doctor, and I had a meeting, next thing you know, I went to the emergency room and I end up in surgery. And a lot of things happened. It was a point of not knowing where to go.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of folks don't know where to go, and they're going to whoever someone refers them to, whether it's a friend or maybe their family doctor or someone from work, or if it's a work-related injury, comp tells them they have to go to a certain doctor, and that may not be in their best interest. That may not be the best thing to help get them better, and may not be the best thing for their case. So that's all important for us to be involved and engage with it in with the client and help guide them through that process, both for their own future and health and treatment, as well as for what's going to be best for them from the legal perspective, to make sure that we can maximize a recovery that's going to help take care of them and their family.
When you initially meet with a family, what are their number one questions?
That's a good question, Joe.
Besides, how much is this case worth?
We get that one a lot, but a lot of times when we're talking about these catastrophic injuries, it's just they don't know what they're going to do. They don't know how they're going to deal with the situation. They don't know how they're going to get through it. They don't know who to turn to. They don't know how they're going to make ends meet. When you have a family when they've lost an income because that catastrophically injured person can't work again and can't supply that to the family. And they're difficult questions and difficult things to deal with, but we do our best to try to help guide them through that process, because the legal process, even though the goal is to get them, you know, significant compensation at the end takes time. As they say, the wheels of justice turn slowly. And as lawyers, we don't have a whole lot of control over that. There are filings when they happen, and the court system
moves
along at a certain speed.
And at the expectations at the beginning, laying that out to let people know, okay, well, this is the process. How long does it take you, and I can only imagine, to size a case up? In other words, somebody comes in and you've had so much experience, you can pretty much, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's a million different facets, but to see, okay, that, you know, this is what's going to have to take place. This is what we're going to have to do.
Depends on the type of case. You know, when we're talking about a medical malpractice case, that we may need records and additional information to evaluate that. But there are some things I've done so many times and I know the medicine so well after 30 years that, you know, if I have a good history, a good story, the person can give me that information, I get a pretty good idea. Other types of cases, if you're talking about a worksite injury case, you know, that's a little more straightforward. I can size that up pretty quickly. Or, you know, someone gets in a trucking crash, or those types of things are pretty easy and straightforward. Product liability cases, again, you know, sometimes they take a little more research and information, but same thing. For 30 years doing that stuff, you get a pretty good idea early on.
All right. We're going to talk about the actual types of catastrophic injuries and what is a catastrophic injury with Joe Messa after the break.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia Radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
At any given moment, somewhere in America, a baby is taking a first step, a developmental milestone. But for too many parents, a baby's first steps aren't just a milestone. They're a miracle. These are the parents of babies who were born prematurely or with birth defects. It's a crisis affecting more than 500,000 babies in the United States each year. You can help them by joining volunteers like you who walk in March for Babies. The money you raise funds research and local programs that help babies overcome the challenges of premature birth and birth defects. Together, our steps make stronger, healthier babies a reality for thousands of families. Sign up today at marchforbabies.org to take the steps that help make milestones and even miracles possible. Who will you march for?
Everybody, let's go, let's go, ho, ho, ho! Welcome everyone to West High School Spring Fling!
All right, I've gone through all the tracks, just move through the beats. Do your thing.
All right, everyone, let's hear it for West High's own Brooke Turner, a.k.a. DJ Brooke.
Scratching at my first school dance takes confidence. So getting into college, I've got what it takes. Okay, I went through the practice sessions, I slept good, I feel good.
We will now begin the test. Please take out your pencils.
I got this.
We're all good at something. Maybe it's breakdancing or skateboarding or video games. Whatever you're good at, you had the skills to make it happen. And those same skills will help us get to college. Visit knowhowtogo.org to learn what you should be doing right now to prepare for college. Start taking the steps at knowhowtogo.org.
I've got what it takes. So do you.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation, and the Ad Council.
In May of 2000, Devo Karnakar skied the full descent of Mount Everest. Every day, somewhere in the world, someone base jumps off a bridge, an antenna, a building, or a mountain peak. At Mavericks, surfers brave 60-foot faces and a punishing rock bottom to ride the world's largest waves. Across suburbia, skateboarders transform curbs, stairs, swimming pools, and cement flood basins into Everests of their own making. In the old days, we called these people adventurers. Now, we call them extreme sports enthusiasts. There's a group of people who jump out of helicopters into 30-foot ocean swells, race vehicles through war zones, chase hurricanes, fly through walls of fire, and maneuver zodiacs through flash floods, all in an effort to save lives. We call these people the Air Force Reserve. The Air Force Reserve. Live the extreme.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show, sponsored by Weinemann Pain and Wellness, Serious Doctors with Serious Injuries. We're having a conversation with Joe Messa, managing partner and founder of Messa and Associates, about catastrophic injuries. Joe, give me an idea of what a catastrophic injury is in comparison to, say, a herniated disc. Which is a serious injury, no question, but let's talk about the catastrophic type.
Well, it's a life-changing, life-altering injury. So catastrophic injuries would be things like amputations, paralysis, a brain injury, and the most catastrophic injury of all, obviously, is death, and something that significantly impacts the life of the person who's injured and their family, the people around them. Everything in between that will prevent someone from being able to do the things that they want to do, whether it's work, obviously, to support themselves or their family, or those things in life that bring them some level of happiness and joy, the things they get to do outside of work, whether that's, working out, swimming, taking a walk in the park with their
boxing.
Children. Boxing, whatever it is.
We know a guy that does that. And what types of, in other words, there's slip and fall incidents, there's construction accidents, there's car accidents, tell me the different types of examples where, of catastrophic injury cases where you may, run into them on a regular basis or more regular than others.
Well, there can be vehicle accidents. I mean, here's an example. I represented a Teamster who was in a trucking crash that was rendered a paraplegic. I mean, it destroyed his life. You can't drive a truck. You can't do anything if you're a paraplegic. And young guy, 20-some years old, 28, never going to work again. Life-altering injury. All four limbs paralyzed. That obviously is a very catastrophic injury. I represented a carpenter who fell on a construction site that was paralyzed, became paraplegic, two young children, couldn't support his family or take care of them again. Brain injuries, people that fall and have a closed head injury or a brain injury, a bleed on their brain, or it doesn't have to be a bleed. You can have a significant brain injury or trauma. I represented a carpenter with another fall at a work site that had a closed head injury, a brain injury, wasn't going to be able to work again, with young children and a family to support. And that's the kind of thing that changes somebody's life forever. We do medical malpractice cases, all types of injuries. I represented a Teamster who had all four of his limbs amputated from negligent medical care. There's the whole gamut of it. Product liability cases where someone's injured on a defective product that can cause amputations, serious injuries, death.
And what's important for people to know, the resources to be able to fight these cases, not a lot of firms actually do the actual medical malpractice. I mean, You're one of the firms that does them. How important is it? And here's one for that family who may have one of those catastrophic type injuries happen to their family member. The importance of having the resources as a firm. How vital and how big a part of that is it when you're fighting Goliath, the insurance company?
It's terribly important, and there's only a small set of lawyers who do malpractice work in this area or the really complex catastrophic injury cases. And there are lots of lawyers that do your day-to-day car accident cases or slip and fall cases that just don't have the resources either financially and or the manpower to do that kind of work. And they try to get the cases and they'll try to refer them out.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Lawyers that do it. Right, we get a lot of work referred by other lawyers, which, you know, certainly, I appreciate. It's flattering that when other lawyers and doctors refer you cases.
Right. That's how you know when the firm is good, when the other lawyers, which a lot of people have a business model, and they, you know, as a law firm where they'll get cases and send them to firms like yours because they know that you have the resources to fight them. One thing I don't think people realize is that, you know, it's somebody, you know, you get injured, it's somebody else's fault. Negligence is a big part of being established to determine that it's a case. But when somebody's actually suing somebody, they're not only, you know, for a wrongful negligence situation, they're not only suing that person, but they're suing the insurance company that represents them, which is often a lot bigger than they are. And then that's where you come in. You're fighting a mega corporation, sometimes with unlimited funds. So having the resources is important. When you're dealing with catastrophic injuries, Joe, and you're dealing with somebody who has the injuries that you're talking about, and you go into a courtroom, and you're dealing with the insurance company. Tell me about what that's like. And, are they just as harsh as they, you know, in other words, do they see the individual that you're seeing standing right next to you? What can that fight be like?
Well, you're talking about not just insurance companies, but, big corporations, big hospital healthcare systems that we've been involved in cases against, every major hospital system throughout Pennsylvania and New Jersey, big corporations, you know, General Electric or Johnson & Johnson, Merck, these big pharmaceutical companies that have unlimited resources. And you're talking about, you know, a fight over a lot of money. They have unlimited resources, and you have to, you know, be prepared to buckle up and go at it with the big boys that have a lot of money and a lot of resources and, you know, an army of lawyers to throw at things. And, you know, we sort of pride ourselves on being able to do that against the biggest firms and the biggest corporations with unlimited resources.
And when you're dealing with that, I would, you know, when I sit there and talk about the human aspect that you have to deal with, you're dealing with the family member, you're dealing with that individual, you're talking about that, especially sometimes like in work injuries, when somebody gets hurt, they've worked for a company for 30 years, okay? You would think that they would, you know, they would get some loyalty back. But you're sitting there representing somebody. And Joe, this is why I said if I'm going to have one guy represent me, it would be you. But I can only imagine when you see somebody, you know, showing no sensitivity to somebody and fighting somebody and beating them up, you know, and clearly, you know, you have a catastrophically injured individual. What's that like? And does it inspire you to, you know, dig in deep?
100%. It actually, you know, it makes me mad. It makes me want to punch somebody in the throat, to be honest with you.
Right.
It takes me back to my roots a little bit. And
not in the mouth, in the throat. He knows where the weak point is.
It makes me want to fight. And unfortunately, a lot of these big corporations and insurance companies, frankly, all of them, they're interested in counting their beans. They're interested in their money. So we see cases where decisions are made all the time. I represented a carpenter who was on a pair of drywall stilts. Drywall stilt broke, ripped his knee to shreds. Oh. Multiple surgeries. Guy's never going to work again. Two young children. And what we found out on this product liability claim against a drywall stilt manufacturer is the stuff was being made over in China. They made stuff out of spec. There were like 25,000 pairs of drywall stilts that were made out of spec that were supposed to be, I think it was 0.5 inch, the thickness of some a metal part, and it was manufactured at 0.05 inch. Instead of throwing the stuff away and getting new stuff, they decided to sell off their inventory of what they had left. And you know you're going to hurt somebody, and you see the car manufacturers do this. You see pharmaceutical companies do it. They're making business decisions. They're messing with, they're playing God with people's lives. So we're gonna make this big company $2 billion off this drug or this product, and we're gonna have to pay out $50 million in claims.
It's a business.
That's
decision.
Good business. So we're gonna do it. People are gonna get hurt. We'll pay them off. The other thing you mentioned about, someone works for someone for 30 years and they think they're going to get taken care of. And the reality of it is it doesn't happen. Even if their employer is interested in, to some extent, making sure they're okay, you have an insurance company or someone behind them who doesn't care about that. A case I have right now, I represent a nurse who worked at a hospital as a nurse for a number of years. She gets bad medical care at the hospital, winds up with an infection, becoming septic. Both her feet amputated, they cast her off. She can't, she's living with her mother and her children can barely support. She can't really support herself or her children. The rest of her family's supporting her. And that hospital, that healthcare system, they could care less about her. They've thrown her out.
Let's talk about, so when somebody comes to you and you take the case, they're not paying out-of-pocket expenses. You can, when you're going up against these individuals, you're investing in the case. How extensive can this get, particularly when you're dealing with, some of these big corporations?
We have six figures in cases all the time. $300,000-$500,000, which is obviously a significant financial investment when we get involved in a case, and that's what it takes sometimes. But, every day, all cases, you're talking $50,000, $75,000, $100,000, $150,000, $200,000. So there's the work and the time that goes into it, and there's also the financial aspect of it. And no one pays us or puts money into that. We front all the costs and expenses and the labor, et cetera, and we only get paid if we're successful at the end.
When you're vetting a case, when somebody comes in, and I'm sure there's a lot of stuff comes across your desk, what are the factors in determining whether you're going to be able to take that case?
Well, we look at, obviously, what the injury is and what the damage is to the person and their family, what their future is going to look like. We look at the question of negligence or if it's a product defect. What's the negligence? Can we prove negligence? Is this a case that we can win at trial? That's one thing we look at. I want to know the story. I want to know about these folks and what they've been through and their families and their backgrounds. I want to be able to understand their story, their individual story, not the case. I want to look at them as people and what their story is, and does that story resonate? Because I'm going to have to tell that story someday in a courtroom. And another thing that we look at is what we call in my office the piss-off facts. What sort of emotion that I can generate in the case piss people off with regard to the defendant, the potential jurors. Those are all things that we look at and evaluate in the case.
You mentioned a little while ago about the big corporations. And to give people an idea, I just did a show recently where talcum powder came up. And there's like thousands of cases. And I get Johnson & Johnson. They're so big that they have yet, and they've probably settled a decent amount, but like you said, Joe, you're talking about shareholders and mass. They're so big, they have yet to put a warning on talcum powder. Literally, they could probably, their liability is out there, and it would probably be decreased if they just put some kind of a disclaimer on the actual, the powder, the bottle of powder or whatever, and they still don't do it. That's the kind of individuals that sometimes you're up against.
Pharmaceutical companies are some of the worst, and people think like they're just making these, or some people think they're just, making these products that are helping us, making our lives easier. Sometimes when I watch the commercials on TV from pharmaceutical companies about different drugs, it blows my mind. Some of the stuff that it's almost like they're drug pushers. They're trying to push the stuff on people here. Call your doctor. Do you have any of these 10 symptoms that everybody sitting in their living room will look at that and say, well, yeah, I have that. My back aches or, my stomach gets bloated sometime. It's absurd. It's like they're drug pushers, but we are talking and I get somewhat passionate about this. A company like Johnson & Johnson, and we've sued Johnson & Johnson many times for children's Tylenol, children's Motrin, We have talc cases, mesh cases, all kind of stuff.
Mesh.
And, you know, huge multinational, multi-billion dollar corporation, Johnson & Johnson. And they have, over the years, enjoyed this reputation because of their marketing and advertising of, you know, Johnson's, you know, baby shampoo, baby powder, puppy dogs, apple pie, and baseball, when really this is a big money-making machine that wants to sell you drugs that might hurt you, and they don't care.
To the point where you're dealing with individuals. All they have to do is put a disclaimer on the bottle, and they won't do it. And they've already been – and I think they have – I forget exactly how many lawsuits when it comes to talc, but I think it was like 10 or 15,000. Like, you know, you're a regular guy. You got a mom-and-pop store. You get one lawsuit, you're a little nervous, right? These people have 15,000 already settled, billions, and it's not a big deal because, like you said, you're dealing with a situation that is that's a business decision. You're dealing with shareholders. I guess – I mean, they obviously look at the loss – their profit and loss statements and say, we can withstand this amount. But what they don't see – like you're saying, Joe, is these are lives. Like, in other words, these aren't just, you know, lawsuits in the balance. In them 10 or 15,000 lawsuits, you're dealing with the potential of, you know, lives that may never be the same. And you, individuals like yourself are the ones that are on the front lines dealing with them. Some people say where change comes is in the courtroom.
Well, it's our job, you know, trial lawyers, to hold these companies, insurance companies, hospitals, doctors, pharmaceutical companies, hold them responsible. And the only way, like you said, sometimes change can happen is they get sued enough, it hits them enough, it hurts them enough in the pocketbook. Because if they're making, you know, thousands of times multiples what they're paying out in claims, they're making business decisions and they're messing with people's lives and playing God, they know people are going to be maimed or killed or injured. To me, that's just morally corrupt.
And no question, because you're dealing, like you just said, to them it's a number. To the family, it's lives and individuals that will never be the same and could be lost lives. We'll have more with Joe Mesa after the break.
My friends, this is Joe Krause. You've heard me on Philadelphia Radio now for over 20 years, and you know I don't often endorse products or people unless they are real game changers. I want to tell you about Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located in Center City, Philadelphia. And at the end of this short personal endorsement, I want you to consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness. If you are recovering from an injury, if you or a family member has been diagnosed with a disorder that has stopped you in your tracks, or if you're like me, determined to learn about wellness while getting yourself prepared to stay healthy so you can enjoy the blessings of your family. Remember the name of this warm and caring location, Weinerman Pain and Wellness. Why should you consider Weinerman Pain and Wellness? Because they are who you expect them to be.
Weinerman Pain and Wellness, located at 100 South Broad Street, just south of City Hall. Call Weinerman Pain and Wellness at 215-988-9503. That's 215-988-9503. Call today.
Introducing the YMCA. What, you already know the why? Or so you think. Sure, you know the why for a swim, a workout, even a game of hoops. But did you know we're more than that? We're a cause. When you take your jump shot at the Y, someone else is getting job training. Take a cardio class while kids are in an after-school enrichment program. Practice your downward-facing dog as a teen practices her leadership skills. That's the why. We work with people no matter their age, income, or background, and give them the opportunity to learn, grow, and thrive, all with one simple goal in mind, to strengthen our community. And we've got so much more that does just that. So while you might think of the why as that place for lifting weights, we're also about lifting entire communities. Introducing the Y. We're so much more than a place. We're a cause. Visit YMCA.net/more.
The thing is, I would never give blood before. You know, before this happened to me, I thought of every excuse in the book. But I'm so thankful that everybody didn't think the way I did, or I would have died.
Like so many new mothers, Noelle needed blood during the birth of her son. Thanks to the American Red Cross and a donor like you, it was there. One donation, just an hour of your time, can help save up to three lives. please sign up to give now at redcrossblood.org.
There are a ton of social networking websites, but one stands apart for a very special reason. This one saves lives. It's MatchingDonors.com. MatchingDonors.com links organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. If you've ever considered becoming a living organ donor, or if you're someone in need of an organ transplant, visit MatchingDonors.com, home of the greatest gift of all, the gift of life, MatchingDonors.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. I'm Joe Doherty, your host, sponsored by Wanamon Pain and Wellness, Serious Doctors for Serious Injuries. We're talking to Joe Mesa of Mesa and Associates, personal injury firm, catastrophic injuries, one of the top in the region. And we've talked about a lot of different injuries. We've talked about, you know, the victims. We've talked about the big corporations. Joe, how about this one? Before we go farther, the contact information for yourself at the and the firm.
Sure. The number's 215-568-3500, or the 800 number's 877-MESSA-LAW. It's MESSA. And our website is MESSA-LAW, MESSALAW.com.
All right. Excellent. And you're right in Center City, Philadelphia, correct?
We are. Our main office is at 22nd and Sansom Street, so we have offices throughout Pennsylvania and New Jersey.
All right. So let's talk about when a case comes to settle. At what point, what circumstances does it often take to when an insurance company says, I want to settle?
Well, more cases do settle than try. However, the way you maximize recovery for your client is to prepare every case for trial and to put the defendants in a position where they know that if they go to trial, they're taking a huge risk. So we never prepare a case to settle. We never recommend at any point that a client even think about settlement.
And the insurance companies, and they know you're willing to go to trial.
They have to, or you're never going to maximize the recovery for your client. But if there gets to a point where, you know, the right money value for the case is offered and it makes sense to settle the case, then you have those conversations with your clients. And I always like to do what's best for the client and what they want to do if it's in their best interest. I'm not in this business for my ego. There are some lawyers who are interested in their ego, or they want to try a case for their own sort of personal fame, getting their name in the paper. For me, it's what's best for the client.
All right, Joe Mesa of Mesa and Associates, thank you so much for being our guest on the Who's Who in Philly Labor Show. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. My name is Joe Doherty. I'm your host. We're sponsored by Wineman Pain and Wellness. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you. Go Eagles.